And now it's time for Power of Prophecy with your host, former professor at the University of Texas at Austin, career United States Air Force officer, and best-selling author, Tex Mars.
Hello, folks. This is Tex Mars. Welcome to another edition of Power of Prophecy. Hey, I have a good friend with me today, and he's written many, many outstanding books. Probably in his field, he is the most celebrated, and of course, that means the most controversial author. But I appreciate him because he's a real truth teller. He does his homework, documents it. His name is Michael Collins Piper. And if you've listened to our program enough, you know that Michael is a frequent guest. He's with the American Free Press out of Washington, D.C., and they've been around for a long, long time. A lot of good folks have come out of that. And Michael Collins Piper seems to have, he just has tenure. He has last ability, I guess you would call it, and durability, maybe I should put it. But I'm positive that Willis Carto, who's the founder and the head man there, a really a legend in his own way, for sure, appreciates the work of Michael. What I appreciate about Michael Collins Piper are his books. He's written many articles, and I read those, and he can get to the crux of a matter very quickly and present documentation. But his books are just tremendous. He had the one on the Final Judgment, which was the first book to really implicate and it described the rationale for the Israeli Mossad connection in the JFK assassination. We might get into that a little bit today. Final Judgment was the title of that book. And boy, I bet that made the Zionist a boiling mad. But there are many other books. The New Jerusalem, The High Priest of War. I have a book, though, in my hand entitled The Caiaphas Complex. Now, if you don't know anything at all about the Bible and the New Testament, you may really not know who Caiaphas is, but he was the high priest. I'll tell you what, I'll let Michael tell that story. But he was the high priest of the Judaic religion in the days of Jesus. But we'll get into that. But the Caiaphas Complex, sort of an interesting thing, and I want to know exactly why he titled the book this. But the front cover says that this is an unsettling, unexpurgated. Now, he's much smarter than me, so he uses big words. I think that means, it's uncut. You're going to get it all here. Exploration of the dark side of the power structure that misrules America and our world today. I like that. So many people talk about the Zionists or other groups ruling America, but Michael, see there how he's able to, he's a wordsmith. And he says they're misruling America. I like the little turn of words there. Michael Collins Piper, welcome to Power of Prophecy.
Well, thanks for having me aboard, Tex. It's always a pleasure. I know you have a lot of listeners because I get emails and letters from them all the time, and they're always very welcome because they're from good people who understand or at least who are trying to understand what is going on in our world today and this power structure that misrules us and has led our country into such tragic times.
You know, I'm glad you recognize the folks who are listening to us today. Most of them are Christian people who are raised in churches, Baptist, Pentecost, whatever, Methodist, good people, and we have a number of Catholics as well. And they don't hear these things in their churches. And so they're shocked to discover the truth. And the first time you hear the truth, it just knocks you down sometime. And I've gotten so many letters that said, thanks. And by the way, many of them mentioned you and your writings, but they'll say, finally, my eyes are open. Finally, I understand. And here's the wonderful thing about it. They actually understand the Bible better, the New Testament. They know why Jesus said in Matthew 23 to the Jewish Pharisees, which is, the Orthodox Jews of today, why he said, you're of your father, the devil, and his works you will do. And he said the Jews were serpents and vipers. That seems so harsh. And yet Jesus said it. And I'm not going to try to take those words out of the Bible. I mean, they're there forever and ever. But you see, people read that before and they didn't quite get it. And then they read a book like The Caiaphas Complex and they go, oh. But here's one thing I like about this book. This doesn't only expose, but it gives people something to do. People are always saying, what can I do, Tex?
Yeah, well, that was the, you know, I tell you, the history of how this book came about is very, very interesting. And in the book, I outline it a bit. Let me just talk about the title for a second, The Caiaphas Complex. Mm. I introduced that theme, that thesis, that idea in my last book, Confessions of an Anti-Semite. And this idea of the Caiaphas Complex, when we keep hearing people talk about the military-industrial complex, or the military-industrial media banking complex, or variations of that theme. And, you know, the whole idea of that complex, which in this context, the complex refers to a foundation of a network of powerful interests working together, you know. Well, that's exactly what we have in what I have called the Caiaphas Complex. I'm referring to all of those powerful interests and underscoring the point that not necessarily controlling all of them, but certainly influencing all of them, whether it's the media, whether it's banking, whether it's the arms manufacturers, all of these different elements that make up this power structure, there is a distinct Jewish influence. And that is why I think it's accurate to refer to it as the Caiaphas Complex, because it is this complex that really is running contrary. The activities of this complex are running contrary to the very interests of Christianity, to the very interests of the United States, and really all of civilization, whether we're talking about Western civilization or whether we're talking about the Muslims of the Middle East or the Hindus of Asia. We do have this powerful Jewish power structure that is so significant. And I think it's appropriate to call it a complex because I point out, and I don't want to get into too much dissection of words and meanings here, but if you look up the word complex in the dictionary, you find that it actually has multiple meanings. You know, in psychiatry, it talks about, you know behavior patterns. The word complex, it's even found in terms of medicine and how various symptoms affect you. Well, if you sit back, and I explore this in the book, if you look back at the word complex, you see that in every distinction of that word, every different definition of the word complex, you can find its application relative to the nature of the Jewish power structure, the Jewish complex in America today, even to the point, if you want to get into the psychoanalysis end of it, where you look at the Jewish relationship with non-Jews, and particularly with Christians. And really, what is the root of that? The root of that is the eternal conflict that has been there ever since Caiaphas, the high priest, sacrificed Jesus Christ and set the stage for him to be crucified. So that's where the title comes from. And the book itself, though, the book itself is more down to earth, because I'll tell you what, Tex, I think all of your listeners, every single one of your listeners, whatever their point of view happens to be, whatever nuanced differences they may have with one another, all of your readers and listeners are people who have very strong opinions. And at the same time, they probably have friends and family members who kind of look askance at them, who kind of get that glazed look in their eye when they start talking about the things that they read on the Power of Prophecy website or in your newsletter or hear us talk about in this program. You know, we all have those friends and family members like that who get this kind of strange look like, oh, there he goes again, or there she goes again, talking about those crazy things, talking about Zionist power and talking about, you know, powerful organizations operating behind the scenes, you know, manipulating both Democrats and Republicans. So this is what's happened. We all have had those experiences. And we have all tried to communicate, and we've all written letters to the editor, or we've all passed out literature. And, you know, that's the important thing here, is that the word all is relevant here, Tex, because while you and I have radio shows and we have newsletters or newspapers that we have access to, you know, and we get interviewed by other people and have a much bigger audience than the average person. The fact is that all of us together are working together.
Mm.
There's people out there who get copies of your newsletter and distribute it. You know, when your newsletter comes into this office here, there's one guy on our staff who really is eager to get a copy of it, you know, and he passes it on to people, you know. There are people out there distributing literature. There are people putting DVDs out there. There are people writing letters to the editor, calling radio shows. We all do our own little part to try to communicate. And that's why my book is dedicated to all of those people, to those people who've written me over the years saying, what can we do?
Mm.
And that is the thing. We all have our own part to play. And in this book, what I have done, now, I'm a writer, and when I sit down, like you are, you know, when you sit down, you know, you have a lot of things to say. It's very easy for me to sit down and write 1,000 words, 1,500 words, you know, 2,000 words. And then my editors at American Free Press say, well, I only have room for 800 words.
Yeah.
That means I have to edit 1,200 words out. Well, you know what? I can do that.
Mm-hmm.
It takes a while. But I'll take an article that's 2,000 words long, and I'll edit it down to 800 words. I know how to do that. I've done it for years and years and years. So I know how to squeeze a lot of ideas into a lot of short places. But see, that's the problem. A lot of people write letters to the editor of their local newspaper.
Mm-hmm.
And they write a 1,000-word letter. And the editor comes back and says, well, we can't publish this because we have a 500-word limit. The average person says, oh, well, wait a minute, I need 1,000 words to say what I have to say. Well, I'm here to tell you, speaking as an editor myself, that's not necessarily the case.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Sometimes, you know, newspapers do have limited space. They're not trying to censor people. So in the Caiaphas Complex, what I have done is I have republished a lot of letters to the editor that have actually been published that I have sent to what you might call mainstream newspapers. Letters to the editor talking about controversial issues, in particular focusing on the activities of the Jewish lobby and of the Israeli efforts to censor the internet, censor the libraries, you know, all sorts of letter. There's a letter to the editor in here about the subject of vote scam, the control of our voting system by private agencies, you know, all sorts of stuff. And what I did, because these are 500-word letters, letters of 500 words or less, plus I've included a lot of private letters that I have written to people over the years, different groups of people about different subjects, like, for example, letters to local educators about Holocaust education and why it's bad, why it's not good for the students, letters to the editor, or things of that nature. Explaining kind of behind the scenes why they need to take action, why they need to stand up, why it's in their interest. And that's the thing, because, you know, that's so important to be able to communicate, you know, in a case of a letter to the editor in a certain number of words, or to try to appeal to someone's basic instincts, you know, saying, hey, look, you want to help the children, but Holocaust education is not helping the children.
Mm-hmm.
So I put all this together, along with a selection of other articles that I've written about other historical subjects. And what I say right up front in the book is that, you know, this book is to help you. I'm urging people to be copycats and to take my sample letter, these letters to the editor. And if they're interested in writing a similar letter to the editor, pick up that information that I provided.
I think that's so important.
You know, mm-hmm. Yeah, it's just kind of a like a how-to type book. You know, I mean, it's like I hold the copyright on the book itself. I don't want someone to go out and reprint my book and sell it, you know, for their own profit.
Mm-hmm.
But for the material within the book itself, I want people to copy it. I don't want people to have to write. They don't have to write me letters and say, can I use this material that's in your book? I say right up front in the book, no, please copy it.
Mm-hmm.
Copy it, because I know it's for a good cause. I want you to take the information and use it in your own letters to the editor and letters to your friends, and if you're calling in radio shows. You know, this is just some basic information about this topic, that what I call the dark side of the power structure that misrules America and our world today. Some ideas, opinions that people can use, I think, effectively.
Well, you know, a lot of people don't know how to get started. You know, you hear about the old writer's block. Well, in a way it is true. And they don't know, it seems like such an impossible task, you know, but if they see a letter by, you know, you that has been effective by a professional writer, and really you're a philosopher, because that's what we're involved in, philosophy, you know, of religion, of politics, and all those areas. And if they can see that as a pattern, it can get them going. It can inspire them. And a lot of things, you know, you like you say, you've written letters to professors, teachers, even you go back and your own teachers back when you were a young man.
School board members in my hometown. And see, let me say something too, Tex. This is important too. You know, okay, I had a college degree and I went to a year of law school. But some of the most intelligent people I know, one of the most intelligent people I know didn't get any further than a third grade education.
Mm-hmm.
One of the most intelligent other people I knew was one of my best friends who all he did was scrub toilets and bathrooms all his life. But he was one of the most intelligent, thoughtful people I've ever known. So, you know, it doesn't take a degree. Now, of course, you got a lot of degrees, Tex, and you've actually been a college professor. You know, so we all come from all different backgrounds, but I'm here to tell you that there are people out there who do have the right ideas, who express their opinions. And then there's someone like my father. My father was a very intelligent man, very witty, very articulate. But you know what? He couldn't sit down and write a letter.
Mm.
He was a railroad engineer, and one time he was involved in a very serious accident.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, railroad engineers go on trial. Well, I had to write my father's thing for him. He could not sit down and write it himself. He had to dictate it to me.
Yeah.
And what he dictated to me was perfectly, perfectly articulate, but he didn't have that capacity to sit down and write it out.
Mm-hmm.
So I just sat there with a typewriter and typed it up and then kind of pulled it together for him. You know, basically his own self-defense legal brief in the matter.
Yeah.
You know. But see, the point is, this is what I'm trying to convey here, and this is so important for your listeners out there, that nobody should ever feel intimidated about expressing their opinions. And if they do feel intimidated, here's a book like this, and there are many, many other sources too that provide, you know, good, solid information. And in this particular case, I want people to feel comfortable in saying, okay, well, I know this guy Mike Piper. I know he's fairly reliable. I can feel comfortable in copying what he has written here and using this because that person thinks it's important. And you know, the thing about it is, nobody should ever feel intimidated by the fact that other people have degrees by the fact that other people may have more reading background than they do, you know, because the thing is, we are all involved in a learning process.
Oh, yeah, and you know, a lot, I'll tell you, having taught at the University of Texas and for other schools, I'll tell you, I had to actually...
Know what you're thinking, but go ahead, yeah.
Yeah. You know, you have to actually unprogram a lot of that. I was... speaking at a church a number of years ago, and I had taught adult psychology, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Actually, some course, I gave it a fancy title. It was called Crises and Adult Adjustment, okay?
Yeah, okay. I'd be afraid to walk into that class.
Oh, yeah, really highfalutin. but this guy came to me up at this church, and he said, do you remember me? And I looked at him, and very vaguely I did. And I said, yes, I think I do. But remind me, you know, because I know you get people like that too.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And he said, I was in your psychology, you know, 400 and something class at Park University. I said, oh. He said, well, I'll tell you one thing. He says, Mr. Morris, I really appreciated what you said today. And it certainly is different than what you taught, you know, 20 years ago when I was in your class. I said, boy, I've really had to unlearn a lot, haven't I?
That's funny.
You know, I was using those psychology professor textbooks, and boy, those were some stupid guys that couldn't relate to the real world.
Yeah.
And so he sort of laughed about that I had to unlearn much of what I had learned in official instruction. And, of course, you're right. Your father, railroad engineer. My father was a refinery engineer. Yeah, I think he had some fancy title, water engineer. I think that meant he turned on the knob that brought water into the factory, you know, made sure the gauges were right or something. But the point is, these men were very intelligent, and things were different back then. Many times they were lucky just to get a job, you know.
Yeah.
But I always appreciate most of the college professors. Really, I feel sorry for them there. And I'll tell you something else. I was just looking over your book, and I made some notes. And if you don't mind me mentioning to them, I'm going to ask you about this. But the question is, a person would say, well, why do I need to know about the Jews, the Zionist Jews? Why is that so important? And it is true what you said. When they mention this to their friends scrunch their faces, and they too are puzzled at why this is such an important issue. But as I was going through your book and seeing the topics, some of the things you discuss and really shed sort of different light on that I think is so fascinating, I was thinking there's war in your book. There's war, there's death, financial chaos, Wall Street, the Fed Reserve, media control of our personal lives. There's the educational institutions. There's the political influence, who really runs America. There's the whole Christian religion and faith. And then you mentioned the word civilization. It gets down to everything that we know as civilization. And so, these are big issues.
You know, it's fascinating, is it? And listening to you enumerate all of that material, I wish I had done it myself, because that is exactly correct. As you were saying that, I actually happen to have a copy of the book with me. Usually when I'm being interviewed, I never have a copy of my own. But yeah, I'm looking through the pages of the book, and that is what is remarkable about it, that you have this, although, you know, one friend of mine, he's a very good friend of mine, he said, oh, is that your latest book on the Jews?
On the Jews.
I said, well, you know, in shorthand, yes, that is, but I said, unfortunately, despite your criticism, it covers so many more areas, and that is why it is important. You know, Tex, this is interesting. I was just having a conversation with someone over the weekend, and you know, it's becoming all the more excruciatingly apparent to me that even though there are millions of Americans, for example, we'll get to a root issue here. You mentioned war right up front. How much more comprehensive an issue, how much more of a root issue that affects an entire nation is there than war? Well, you know, there's still a remarkable number of people, and I'm talking in the millions, I'm sure, who do not understand that our involvement in Iraq came precisely because of Jewish power and influence in this country. They don't make the connection. They do not make the connection that the Iraq War happened largely, almost overwhelmingly, because of the fact that the State of Israel, the Jewish state as it calls itself, objected to the presence of Saddam Hussein ruling Iraq. Now, and then there's a question of, you know, nuclear weapons. Well, right now, you know, people are understand a little bit more about it vis-a-vis Iran and the possibility of war with Iran. But they didn't understand that with Iraq. It was like most people thought, oh my God, if Saddam Hussein has nuclear weapons, he might blow up New York or Miami or Kansas City, Kansas, and Kansas City, Missouri, one or the other or both, you know. But nobody really understood that it was really about Israel and about Jewish power and about Jewish concerns. And that remains to this day. Now, you know, it's a relatively simple proposition in the minds of most of your listeners. They understand that. But to the average person, that there is no connection there. They don't get the connection there. You know, so we really are dealing with root issues, core issues that affect our very survival. And you know what I always say? I just had somebody on my own broadcast over at Republic Broadcasting, a couple weeks ago, I mentioned something to the effect that I didn't believe that the Jews as a group were in complete power of the United States and or the world. Now, you know, you can quibble over details of it. But what I went on to say was, well, I said, the way I view Jewish power is that as immense as it is, And sometimes it's almost overwhelming, if not overwhelming outright. I view it more as a fulcrum upon which the balance of power exists, that there may be some issue that the country is going back and forth on. But when the Jews weigh in, that's what'll push things in their direction, in the direction they want. Whereas on other issues, their power is so immense that they do put the pressure on, and they achieve what they want. So it's like there are pockets of resistance to Jewish power. You know, people within the government, people within the various government agencies, police agencies, ranging from the FBI to the CIA and so forth. You know, there are people in there who do oppose the Caiaphas complex, you know, who do what they can. But and that's the point. That's why I think what you and I are doing is important, is because we're reaching out there to people and letting them know that there is this information available to them. They can use this information to alert other Americans. And the more Americans that we can alert and that our friends and supporters can alert, they are out there. And the people in the government who are on our side, the people who are standing in opposition, however quietly, to the Caiaphas complex, they know that there are people out there who support what they're doing. And it makes them more ready to challenge the powers that be. And it also, and another important thing, too, is, it also sends a message to various interests, financial interests, religious groups, ethnic groups all over the world, here in the United States and all over the world, when they know that there's a real solid group of Americans out here who are standing in opposition to all of these bad things and to the Jewish interests that are behind so many of these problems. It makes them more emboldened. It makes them more prepared to stand up because, you know, it's the old concept of unity and strength. If you think you're the only person out there saying something, you're not as likely to speak out. But over the years, I have been reliably informed by a lot of people in a lot of places here in the United States and around the world that there are groups of powerful businessmen, industrialists, financiers. There are people in high ranks in the militaries of the world and in the intelligence agencies of the world who very candidly are on our side. They stand in opposition to the Zionist Jewish agenda and its international tentacles. And, you know, they do what they can to resist it. Mm. And oftentimes, you know, they have trouble doing it, but they do it. And every once in a while, you know, you'll see evidences of it. You know, when there's certain political explosions. I let me give you an example. When these guys Walt and Mearsheimer, the famous professors who wrote the book, The Israel Lobby.
Yeah, and the power of it.
Out, mm-hmm. Yeah, when those guys came out and wrote that book.
Great. Highly esteemed professors.
Yeah, these guys widely respected.
And it just shook up the whole Jewish world.
Yeah.
Because they were hoping that people of that much acclaim would keep shut.
Yeah, well,
shut their mouths shut about the Israeli lobby.
Happened. What I'm positive happened there was, and there were intimations of this and things that were written about Mearsheimer and Walden. What these guys were.
Hold on just a minute. Oh, we're going to have to go for a break. And this is so important. I want to start back right here again, okay, when we come back. Because this is vital. Okay, folks, my guest again is Michael Collins Piper. His new book, The Caiaphas Complex. Remember old Caiaphas, the high priest that he and his high counselor had Jesus put to death? And I'm also going to ask Michael when we come back, perhaps, about the fact they had their own intelligence network going. Caiaphas did. And the high priest, the rabbis of Jesus' era Israel. Remember, they had Judas right there within the ranks of Jesus spying on him, and they gave him 30 pieces of silver. So they had their own intelligence network. Do the Jews today in America have their own intelligence network? Might they be listening to this radio program? Well, we'll be right back with Michael Collins Piper. Hello, friends. Again, Tex Morris here. You know, Michael Collins Piper's newest book, The Caiaphas Complex, is one of the more fascinating books he's written, and that's saying a lot. I want to offer this book to you. There's so much here, and we're just going to touch the surface. In fact, I'm looking now at the table of contents. There's so much in here. He talks about the truth about Columbine. You know, Dillon and Klebold, the two mass murderers, they were both Jews. And he talks about the little-known details about the tragedy. Of course, there's the Jewish domination of the media, the attack on the USS Liberty, the massacre of the U.S. Marines in Beirut, the Pope John Paul II being attacked by the Jews and the meaning of that. There's General Colin Powell, the Jewish lobby, how America is involved in all of these wars over and over. Jimmy Carter, President Jimmy Carter, and his battle with the Jews. Things in here that have never been really reported from a truthful perspective. And I want you to have this book. By the way, even the Protocols of Zion are discussed in this book. The Holocaust, did it really happen the way they said it did? The Anti-Defamation League, the ADL. Oh, what a disgusting organization that is. And he exposes that as well. The Southern Poverty Law Center. They were recently in the news, you know. I wish I had more time to talk about that with Michael today. But I want you to have this book. You can have your own personal copy. $25. Please, $25 for the book. Caiaphas. That's spelled a little tough here. C-A-I-A-P-H-A-S. The same Caiaphas that was the high priest in the New Testament during the trial, the rigged trial, you might say, of Jesus Christ when he was crucified. The Caiaphas Complex by Michael Collins Piper. $25. Please add $5 shipping and handling. Here's how to get your personal copy of the Caiaphas Complex. And I promise you will not regret it. You'll be blessed. Just phone us toll free, 1-800-234-9673. 1-800-234-9673 during the work week, Monday through Friday, 8 to 5 Central Time. Now, you can go to our website, powerofprophecy.com, and order the Caiaphas Complex. Use your PayPal, your charge card, and so forth. That would be powerofprophecy.com. Or you can write to us. Send us a total of $30, and that will take care of the shipping, the postage, everything, and the book, of course. And we have plenty of copies, as far as I know. If not, we'll move fast to get them. And the publisher is always good to help us out in that respect. The Caiaphas Complex, just write to us at Power of Prophecy or to Tex Morris. Power of Prophecy or Tex Morris, 1708 Patterson Road, Patterson Road, Austin, Texas, 78733. Now let's return to the program where we're discussing with Michael Collins Piper the Israel lobby that controls the White House and our Congress. And he was talking about the Walt and Morsheimer report. So let's take up where we left off. Welcome back, Michael.
Yeah, thanks, Tex. I appreciate your good support for my books and for the work of American Free Press. Walt Morsheimer wrote this book, The Israel Lobby, which was based on an extended, expanded version of a report they had done, which was published in a journal in London. And I think really to understand what that was all about, and there was a great controversy surrounding that book. It comes back to what we were talking about before the break, and that is the fact that Morsheimer and Walt were not just acting on a whim. They were not just two people who suddenly got up one day and said, well, we're very distinguished professors who we're going to criticize the Israeli lobby. They were influenced from behind the scenes by other influential academics, by other influential people who came to them and said, hey, look, we have a very serious problem in this country and in the world today with the influence and the power of the Jewish lobby and the very well-heeled forces that are behind it. And we have a lot of people who are criticizing them quietly. We have people who are writing about them and talking about them. But we need someone with a big academic names, people who are respected within the foreign policy establishment, to come out publicly and say what so many other people like Tex Mars and Mike Piper are saying. Now, I'm not saying that these people actually pointed out Tex Mars and Mike Piper, but, I mean, what they were saying is that, look, we need some big, distinguished names in the foreign policy realm to stick your necks out. We need you to come out there and act as lightning rods. We need you to come out there and say these things that need to be said and get this debate started. Well, their book was published, and it did create controversy. They were attacked repeatedly. They were called anti-Semites, but it got public discussion going. And it was around that time, and this kind of ties into what I've done with the book, The Caiaphas Complex. At the time that that came out, their book, The Israel Lobby, and their report, I sent it to some of my former school teachers in my hometown and to some other opinion makers in various places, you know, and said, hey, look, here are these two distinguished professors. They are saying what I have been saying for years. And people pointed at me and said, well, Piper's a nut, or he's an extremist, or he's a this, or he's a that. But these guys are saying exactly what I've been saying. And this is the kind of thing that wakes people up. And what I'm sure, based upon a variety of things that I read about Walton Mearsheimer, that is exactly what happened. That there were some influential people who came to Walton Mearsheimer and said, look, even if you lose your jobs because of this, even if you lose some money this way or that way, we'll take care of you guys. But we need somebody of some substance in the academic and foreign policy community to finally come out and say enough is enough. We've got to reexamine the relationship with Israel and Zionism. And so that's what that was all about. And that's why it so upset the Jewish lobby in this country, because they were being challenged.
So
they knew that even though there was just these two lonely professors speaking out publicly, those two lonely professors represented powerful forces behind the scenes.
Yeah, you know, one of them was from Harvard University, the John F. Kennedy School of Government, I believe.
Yeah.
The other was
what,
University of Chicago. So very, very in foreign policy, that's at, you know, at the very top most levels. Now, tell us a little bit about the CIA. Actually, it was the 16 intelligence agencies that refused to go along with the Israel lie and the George W. Bush, Dick Cheney lie about Iran having nuclear weapons.
Well, now, that's a perfect example there, Tex, of how we do see manifestations, public manifestations of behind-the-scenes opposition to the Jewish lobby and the big financial interests that bankroll it, these people that have connections in the media, the Federal Reserve, et cetera. The Caiaphas Complex, as I've called it. Well, what happened? You know, we had all this propaganda in the mass media that, oh, Iran is building nuclear weapons, and it's not only a threat to Israel, but it's a threat to Western civilization itself. So, you know, the Iranians, if they don't attack the United States, they might give the weapons to terrorists who will attack the United States. This is the constant grind coming out of Fox News, which is, of course, controlled by Rupert Murdoch, who's a pro-Zionist billionaire. The constant grind coming out generally from the mass media in one form or another. So you had all this propaganda coming out there. And even President Bush at the time was making these noises and saying, oh, you know, they had just fought a war against Iraq over nuclear weapons, which, of course, never existed. And, of course, yet still the American people were being ratcheted up for yet another war in defense of Israel because of nuclear weapons. You know, of course, Israel is allowed to have nuclear weapons, even though they don't officially admit to it. But no other country in the Middle East is allowed to. And the very idea that Iran might even be working on nuclear power, which doesn't even necessarily imply nuclear weaponry, is just too much for Israel. So we have all this propaganda coming out constantly in the news that, oh, my God, Iran is getting ready to blow up the world. And yet what happens? 16 different American intelligence agencies, from the various military divisions, from the CIA, probably even the FBI, you know, all these different intelligence agencies, most of which we've never even heard of, or most Americans have never heard of, together as one voice, they give out their national intelligence estimate during the, I think it was the last year of the Bush administration, and they say, nope, nope. Nope. Now, what they said, what they were telling us was everything you've heard from the Israeli lobby, everything you've heard from President Bush, everything you've heard from Fox News, everything you've heard from the Prime Minister of Israel, everything you've heard from John Hagee isn't true. Iran isn't anywhere close to building a nuclear bomb. So, you know, this is a major news story, Tex. And it was reported in the mass media. It was reported. But the thing is, most Americans seeing the report, you know, in your average small town newspaper, like in the little central Pennsylvania town, the rural community where I grew up, a story like that might be relegated to a 3 or 4 paragraph story that might be on page one.
Well, Michael,
or it might be a little one paragraph story.
But here's the whole thing about it. You know, if you just look, think of it just a moment, this is wonderful good news.
Exactly.
Because they're telling us we may have to go to war. You know, Israel is, and the Bush White House, and even now, you know, Barack Obama's continued the lie. And they're telling us we're going to have to go to war with Iran. It will cost you trillions of dollars. We'll probably have to cut your Social Security and all these other entitlements, Medicare, to pay for it. And many thousands, who knows how many, 2,000, 20,000, 50,000 Americans will die. The price of gasoline, because the Gulf will be closed up, could shoot up to, you know, $10 or $20 a gallon. That will break the back of the American economy. But it's necessary to stop those mushroom clouds, the weapons of mass destruction, from these maniacs, the Ayatollahs and Ahmadinejad from Iran. We've got to go to war. And suddenly, the world's greatest intelligence agencies, all 16 of them, and you mentioned some of them, and of course I'm thinking of the National Security Agency also, the National Reconnaissance Organization, which has all the satellites in space, and there's the CIA and the Defense Intelligence Agency and the Naval Intelligence Agency. All of them together signed a document saying, ain't so, ain't so.
Now,
Iran has no nuclear weapons, is not developing a nuclear weapon, and if they even started today, it would be 10 years from now before they get their first nuclear weapon. That has to be such good news. You would think that Bill O'Reilly and Brian Williams and Rachel, the lesbian Madoff, and all of them would be saying, wonderful news today. This is the greatest news. We're going to save trillions of dollars. We're going to save thousands of lives. Because now we know from America, the world's greatest intelligence agencies, there's no threat from Iran. You would think that the Associated Press, everybody would breathe a sigh of relief. Americans who drink would go get drunk. I would just go get a big Coca-Cola with my wife, Wanda. We would celebrate with a piece of apple pie. And you people at AFP would be, you know, sitting around clapping. Thank God for the truth of these. But instead, you go around to Americans and say, do you really think, you know, my own sister, she says, we've got to do something because Iran has nuclear weapons. And I said, well, did you know about these 16 intelligence agencies, what they said? She said, never heard of that. Never heard of it.
Yeah, precisely. And what it represents is precisely what I was talking about, the fact that there are these good people in the military, in the intelligence agencies, in law enforcement, in the diplomatic community, people whose names and faces we don't know now and we probably never will know, but they are in there. Fighting for America, fighting for us, fighting against the powers that be.
Mm.
Now, the president couldn't fire all of them. You know what I mean? It's like they all stood up together as one voice and said, hey, there was not one lone dissenter there.
Yeah.
And those people, those 16 agencies, most of whose names are totally unfamiliar to Americans, I wouldn't have even thought of the National Reconnaissance Agency or the organization, NRO, if you hadn't mentioned it, if my life depended on it, I wouldn't have even thought of them if I had to list those agencies. So,
hey, you know what, Michael? It just came to me.
I
wonder if this, when this report came out, it made Dick Cheney furious, right?
He had to have blown his top.
I wonder if it was around the time when he shot one of his best friends in the face. it's South Texas on the hunting preserve.
I'm mad, that mad.
Yeah, but there must be a link there somewhere.
Yeah, I wouldn't doubt that in my mind.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, but the point is that, see, this is why we need, you techs and me and all your listeners, that's why we all need to continue doing what we're doing, telling our friends and neighbors about facts just as this. That's a perfect example of something that people need to know about.
Yeah.
You know,
well,
it's
war. It's death. All these things that you talk about in your book that are of such vital importance.
It's all there. And, you know, see, this is a point I try to convey to people, that so much of this information, good, solid information, not rumor. I mean, it's right there. That was published in the – it was published in the newspapers.
In the New York Times.
Nobody understood the importance of it. When I say nobody, I mean most of the people didn't understand the importance of it. And that's why there are still people who, even the day after that was published in the newspapers, even if it was buried in the papers or even if it was even on the front page – and it was on the front page of the New York Times and the Washington Post – but see, there's the thing. This goes to show you the power of money, the power of the Jewish lobby. Even though the intelligence agencies have come together and said this, and it's reported on the front page of the New York Times and the Washington Post, the political forces, the public political forces, the members of Congress, their staff, people who are bought and paid for by the Israeli lobby, which influences Capitol Hill, even though our intelligence agencies said all these things, they still turn around and say, oh, but we have to protect Israel and we have to.
You know, that is a good point. So Republican, the head of the House, the Speaker, Boehner, or the Democrat, head of the Democrats there, Nancy Pelosi, they're still, the next day, they just go out and pretend this report never came out.
Exactly. But the fact is, that there are all those good people in those agencies who know what they found themselves. You know, they know what they saw in their studies, okay? You know, they know that they're being ignored, and that makes them mad. And I'll tell you what, I just this past weekend, I don't want to reveal either of the names, but it may come out publicly here in the next few days, but a very well-known former CIA officer had occasion to have lunch with a friend of mine here in the Washington, D.C. area the other day. And this friend of mine, whose name I could mention, but I don't want to, his name is fairly well known, pretty well known. I think a lot of your listeners would know his name. He had lunch with this former CIA official. And the CIA official told him flat out and quite frankly that all of the people in the intelligence agencies. Now, of course, it may not be every single person in the intelligence agencies, but the way he put it was all of the people in all of our intelligence agencies hate Israel. They hate the Israeli lobby. They hate what Israel and its lobby are doing to the United States and American foreign policy.
Wow.
Now, he said, unfortunately, though, he added, he said, but everybody's afraid to act. Now, they did, and he didn't say this, I'm just reflecting upon this now. Now, they did stand up when they issued this national intelligence estimate that we've been talking about here. Mm-hmm. But in terms of actually sticking their necks out, they're all too bureaucratized at this point to be able to, for any number of them to act out. To stand up and speak out, you know, and that's kind of what we have with the politicians as well, the elected officials in the House and the Senate. You know, despite all the rhetoric that we get from these politicians who stand up and say, oh, I love Israel, Israel's our best friend, Israel is the best thing since sliced bread, these guys firsthand, these guys and gals, I should say, to be non-sexist here, although I guess you're not allowed to say gals, these guys and these women, they feel the pressure on a daily basis of the Jewish lobby. They know how these warmongers are coming in and pressuring them to give more arms to Israel and to take offensive measures. And, you know, that's the whole thing. They need to hear from us. They need to know that we do know what's going on.
Good point. Good point.
See, that's the point, that we need to communicate. We need to let these people know.
Excuse me.
We need to let them know that if they're ready to stand up, we're ready to support them.
Well, listen, I think that's the key. And no telling who has read your books. You know, The Golem, for example, where you expose the hundreds of nuclear weapons that the Israelis have and are holding everybody's, you know, over everybody's head. Just the beast system. And all of the books that you've done, I wonder how many people in the Pentagon have read your books.
Well, I mean, I know for a fact that certain things I have written, you know, and I'm not being mysterious about it, but I mean, I know for a fact that like, for example, my book Final Judgment has been read in some higher circles.
Oh, yeah.
I know that for a fact. I mean, I just know that based upon a variety of things, not the least of which is the fact that a former high-ranking State Department official on his own initiative wrote a glowing endorsement of Final Judgment that he posted on the Internet. Now, you know, and so it's out there. I mean, you know, these kind of things are out there, and I have been told confidentially that there are high-ranking people who listen to my broadcast. I know that this was a couple years ago. I can't say for certain they listen to everything that I say, but what the point is that they're, and I just don't mean me individually, but I mean what I mean is that I know for a fact there are people who do listen to my broadcast, but they listen to the broadcasts of independent voices.
Now there's
they
key.
Want to see what people are saying. They want to see what X-Mars is saying because they know that you have a broad outreach. They know that you impact on a lot of people. So they do pay close attention to it, and they are glad for the support that they do get. They're not going to come out and issue press releases saying, hey, Mike Piper and Tex Mars are doing a great job, keep it up, because they can't afford to do that.
Mm-hmm.
But they can do what they can do behind the scenes and know that we're acting as cheerleaders for them from afar and saying, hey, there are good people. There are good people in the military, in the intelligence community, people who are working behind the scenes to try to, you know, try to pull as many plugs as they can, you know, or try to plug as many holes as they can, you know, and save the ship from going down, you know.
Well, you know, we know this much, that Dick Cheney and George W. Bush fully intended to attack Iran on behalf of Israel.
Absolutely.
But there was opposition that we, as you rightly said, we know nothing about. So there are patriotic people out there, and I think our books, you know, can you imagine somebody's trying to stand up behind the scenes and fight this stuff, and he knows he's taking on a Leviathan, a Goliath, and he reads a letter to the editor by somebody saying, hey, Israel has too much power. Israel lobby runs America. We need to stop sending our military weapons to Israel. You know, finally he says, well, thank God I'm not the only one.
Exactly, exactly. And of course, when they're together behind the scenes talking privately, I guarantee you the things that these people in high places are saying behind the scenes is going to scare Abe Foxman and the Anti-Defamation League and Benjamin Netanyahu a lot more than what Mike Piper has written in his book.
Yeah.
Books, you know what I mean? These are people who can make a phone call and talk to the highest admirals and generals in the military, or they can get the head of the CIA on the phone. You know, I mean, former CIA director William Colby, you know, he died mysteriously. And now there's a new video out about him done by one of his children. I mean, I personally know a guy who used to be the international correspondent for the Spotlight, knew Bill Colby and his wife, Sally Colby, fairly well. He knew Mrs. Colby better, but this colleague of mine, Andrew St. George, actually arranged for William Colby to begin working very, very closely with some high-ranking anti-Zionist Arabs, and I emphasize they were anti-Zionist Arabs because there are elements in the Arab world that have collaborated with Zionism.
Oh yeah, the Saudi sheikhs and all. Yeah,
the ones that William Colby was working with, starting about 6 months before his death, they were very much part of the anti-Zionist bloc internationally. And you know, when after Bill Colby, his former director of the CIA, died mysteriously at his cabin down there. You know, they found him floating in the water, and they said he'd either had a heart attack and drowned, or, you know, Andrew talked to a lot of the people who had been to the funeral.
Mm-hmm.
Now, and Andrew himself may have been at the funeral. This point escapes me. But the bottom line of it is, it was the general consensus of the people at William Colby's funeral that he had been murdered by the Mossad. Or by elements working on behalf of the Mossad. If it wasn't a Mossad hit team directly, it was people working for Israeli interests.
It's reputed that he was writing a tell-all book. Do you think that's so?
I don't know anything about that. It's entirely possible that he was, but I'm kind of inclined to think that Colby was kind of one of these people who would probably prefer to work behind the scenes, you know, and use what influence he could that way. And that's why he was a danger, because, you know, someone like him is a perpetual danger. And he was also, by the way, his death happened at precisely the time when Zionist elements in Congress were pushing for a major overhaul of the U.S. intelligence community. And Colby was one of the people who had made noises, as I recall, in opposition to the proposed changes. There was some, they were trying to basically put all the intelligence agencies under one super director.
Oh, I remember that. Wanted to create like a czar of intelligence.
Yeah, exactly. And
they would have wanted, of course, a Zionist czar.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. And see, now there, just give you another example of how there are elements behind the scenes that do work against even the most powerful forces. Do you remember what happened to former CIA director John Deutsch?
Oh, yes.
He basically, as I recall, now this is off the top of my head, but as I recall, he was forced to leave office, or at least he was heavily embarrassed and eventually left office after it was discovered that a top secret computer that he had control of had been left exposed in his own home.
Yeah.
Well, you know, the reason why we knew about that, let's face it, is because there were people inside the intelligence community who did not like John Deutsch, and they didn't like John Deutsch because he was such a hardline Zionist, and they used this opportunity to kind of hit him.
To get rid of him.
Where it hurt. So that's what, a lot of that is these are manifestations, open manifestations of the very real opposition to the Caiaphas complex that is happening from within the complex itself.
Michael, these are all good news. There are people out there fighting for us. They're not all evil, not all the policemen. I mean, hey, look, you guys this week interviewed several good sheriffs and
absolutely, good example.
There's good FBI guys and CIA. I realize there's a lot of bad apples. But we all need to work together and don't just say, oh, you're FBI, you're a bad person. No. You know, judge each person for themselves. Be leery, of course. Your book is a great one, The Caiaphas Complex. We've run out of time, Michael, but I want to thank you, Michael Collins Piper, for being our guest today on Power of Prophecy.
Tex, I always appreciate it, and God bless you and Wanda and your whole great staff there at Power of Prophecy.
Okay. Hug that cat, Donald, for us.
I'll do that.
That you've got there, and tell Willis and your staff there how much we appreciate what they're doing.
All right. Well, I know all the folks up here at American Free Press appreciate your good work, Jack.
Well, great. Come down and visit us in Austin, okay?
All right. We'll have to do that.
All right. God bless.
All righty. Thanks a lot, Tex.
Okay. Folks, that's Michael Collins Piper, author of many books. His most latest is The Caiaphas Complex. For $30, you can order it from the ministry here. Great to be with you today, and my fervent prayer is that you'll tune in each week during this same time and discover the power of prophecy.